flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Friday afternoon, January 24th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. There is concern about a big jump in the cost of vehicles should President Trump impose some of the tariffs he's threatened. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the 18th annual Chicago Restaurant Week is underway. Joining us now is Isaac Reichman, spokesman for Choose Chicago. Isaac, thank you for joining us today. And you know the idea of Chicago Restaurant Week is a success when you see other towns in the Chicago area do their own Restaurant Week. So clearly, this is an idea that has struck a chord with a lot of people, Isaac.
Yeah, it certainly has. It's a great idea and a great way to support your favorite restaurants during some of the slower months of the year.
Now, it starts today, runs through February 9th, Super Bowl Sunday. It's been going on for 18 years. You know the deal. It offers prefix menus at participating restaurants in Chicago and the suburbs now. And you do get to take advantage of some tasting menus prepared by chefs across the city. This has been going on for 18 years. And throughout the history of Chicago Restaurant Week, I mean, maybe you were there for the entire thing, or maybe other people have told you about it. But when did the city know this was a kind of this was going to be a success?
Yeah, I'm relatively new here. This is only my third Restaurant Week at Choose Chicago. But I think we knew, from what I hear, we knew pretty early on. And it's been a pretty constant growth every single year. Obviously, the COVID pandemic moved, you know, had changed it a little bit. But we're seeing year and year more interest, both from patrons and restaurants. And this year is actually our biggest one with over 500 restaurants.
And that also has to be a remarkable number, just given the uncertainty that had been swirling around the restaurant business, not only in Chicago, but across the country during those uncertain COVID times, that this represents not only the best participation rate for Chicago Restaurant Week, but also kind of a return to form for the entire restaurant space.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, restaurants are still, they're still working to get as many patrons as they possibly can. But I think you see in Restaurant Week this year and every year, you just see such love for our restaurant community. I think our local Chicagoans want to support restaurants and they want a reason to get outside, even if, as you said, it's 17 degrees out. And this is the way to do it. It's the way to explore new cuisines, new neighborhoods, and show your love to your restaurants that are here with us year round, but maybe need a little bit more love during January and February.
And the great thing about it, too, I mean, we have an embarrassment of riches as far as restaurants and culinary traditions that are represented in the city. But if you really want to sample things that are outside of your comfort zone, you want to try everything, but you don't know what the good stuff what the signature dish is on the menu. These tasting menus are a really great way to get your feet wet in a lot of different genres.
Yeah, exactly. And people always ask, what's your tip for restaurant week? My tip is to go explore either a neighborhood or a cuisine that you've never had before. There are so many options. You can go to our website, eatitupchicago.com. That's where you can find the full list. You can filter by neighborhoods and by cuisines. And as you mentioned, there is everything. I talk about restaurants and talk about Chicago's hospitality industry for a living, and I still can't come close to naming all the restaurants in Chicago. There's so many incredible ones, so many incredible chefs doing unique things. And this is your chance, as you said. Some of them have some of their menu favorites that are part of the Restaurant Week menu. Some of them make their own Restaurant Week menu that is things that aren't on their day-to-day menu. So it's such a really great opportunity.
Isaac Reichman, spokesman, Choose Chicago. Thank you for joining us today to talk about Chicago Restaurant Week, which kicks off today and runs until February 9th.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President Trump has threatened to place 25% tariffs on products made in Mexico and Canada. Let's discuss what that could mean for the auto market with John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. John, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like we've come off of this period of a great deal of uncertainty and stress, not only for the auto industry, but for the people who sell the cars, just because there were so many supply chain disruptions coming out of COVID-19. There was the whole issue involving the chips inside the cars. And it seems only recently have we achieved some degree of stability after a great deal of instability over the last couple of years. And now we have this threat of tariffs on products from Mexico and Canada. And what is that going to do to the automotive industry if they are actually imposed?
Yeah, Rob, look, everybody in the auto industry is talking about this. The car companies, their suppliers, their dealers. Because a 25% import tariff on cars coming from Canada and Mexico, it's going to raise their prices significantly. I mean, let's just assume for the moment that the average vehicle is $40,000 to make the math easy. I mean, you're talking about an increase of over $8,000 a vehicle, more like $10,000. And these tariffs are supposed to go into effect February 1st. That's just a little over a week away. So the industry really doesn't have any time to make adjustments for this. And that's why they're all deeply worried as to what's actually going to happen. And I emphasize that because sometimes President Trump, you know, says things as a bargaining tactic, and we'll see what he actually carries through on. But if he carries through on this, you're going to see car prices go up significantly.
Now, we know a lot of cars are made in the United States. There are a number of manufacturing plants representing car companies both based in the U.S. and abroad. But there is a significant number of car manufacturing that takes place in Mexico. Some takes place in Canada. But even the cars that are made in the U.S. of A., what about their parts sourcing? Where do those parts come from? And how would the tariffs impact getting those parts to American automotive factories?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, the tariffs apply to parts as well. And, you know, in some cases, I'll use the example, you know, here I am in Detroit, right across the river is Canada. We do a lot of trade back and forth between the U.S. and Canada, but some things go back and forth across the border several times. So, for example, there might be a casting that gets cast in Michigan, and then it gets shipped across the river into Windsor, Ontario, where it gets some heat treating, and then it comes back to the U.S. for some machining and so forth. Well, guess what? Those tariffs get applied every single time it crosses the border, and that would send the prices through the roof. So, I mean, it's a real tough position, and there just is not enough manufacturing capacity in the U.S. just to all of a sudden move all that production here. And even if it does happen, and I'm not sure it will, it would take years to make these changes. So that's why everybody in the industry is very concerned about where this is going to go.
And then very quickly, what would this do for the used car market, which also was extraordinarily hot during that supply chain disruption? If you couldn't buy new, those certified pre-owned vehicles were very attractive alternatives. So would used cars get a second look once again under this scenario?
Absolutely. You know, we'll see the same thing happen when there was the chip shortage during COVID. People can't get new cars, but they need something, you know, to replace their old clunker, even if they get a used car. So you're going to see a significant increase in demand for used cars, and that will push up prices.
John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, jumpstarting your teenager's financial future. It's 12:15.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The seeds for solid financial habits in adulthood can be sowed in the teenage years. Let's look at some ways to do that with Tony Ogorek, founder of Ogorek Wealth Management in Buffalo, New York. Tony, thank you for joining us today. And earlier in the week on the program, we talked about how Gen Z is learning to get into financial education in a big way. They want to learn about money and investing. But in this case, Tony, you need to learn how to walk before you can run, and you learn how to walk in your teenage years.
That is true, Rob. And one of the things I would not advise is a teenager thinking they're going to be able to make money, find their fortune by either issuing a cryptocurrency or becoming an influencer. You know, those take a lot of time and effort. But, you know, I think a lot of kids, you know, they don't listen, you know, but they do observe. And I think a great thing for parents to do, you know, when they're paying their utility bills, for example, or their cell phone bill, would be to sit down with their kids and say, hey, take a look at this. This is what it costs every month for this. Another great thing is looking at a credit card. And I think a lot of kids think that credit card is free money that you get. And really what they have to understand is that it is a future claim on your income. And unless you can pay that back at the end of the month, you're going to be charged probably 30% on your purchase. You'd never go into a store and pay 30% more for something than the actual price. But if you finance it on a card and you hold it for a year, that's effectively what you're doing.
And I think it's just introducing them into the world of your financial decisions. I mean, maybe, and I think a lot of parents, you know, sometimes maybe you're not really inclined to include them in those conversations because maybe if the parents are stressed about money, they don't want the kids to become stressed about money, or God forbid, talk about their parents' stress about money with their friends. But people are curious, and if you take some of the mystery away, they can learn some grown-up habits along with you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're in Buffalo, you're in Chicago, you know, so if you put the heat down to 68 or 70 and the kids want it higher, you just pull out the fuel bill and say, you know, this is whatever it is, $300-$400 for this, put a sweater on, unless you want to start contributing. Or they want an expensive pair of sneakers or whatever the case may be. Maybe the parent says, look, I'll pay half of it, you know, and then you go out, get a job, do some stuff, whatever it is, and you come up with the other half. And I'm a big believer, Rob, in having skin of the game. And I think if the kids can have skin of the game, that's a great thing. Also, I would say, you know, with life expectancies going, you know, longer and longer, you know, in the teens, it's an ideal time if they're making any kind of money to just sack it in a Roth IRA. They're going to be amazed, and just put it in an index fund. They're going to be amazed at how that grows over time. And it'll also, you know, engender an interest in financial markets, which is really where they're going to be making money over time.
Tony Ogorek, founder of Ogorek Wealth Management in Buffalo, New York. Thank you for joining us today. Topping our news at the half hour. On a night featuring bone-chilling temperatures, the city of Chicago worked to tally the number of people who are living on the streets. The details from WBBM's Bernie Tafoya.
Overnight temperatures were in the single digits as more than 250 people fanned out to conduct the city's annual point-in-time homeless count. They counted people who were sleeping in the streets, in parks, and in shelters. Maura McCauley is acting director of the city's Department of Family and Support Services.
What this count does is it helps us understand the experiences, the needs, and the trends that are emerging from year to year.
Last year, there was an explosion in the number of homeless, mainly due to the influx of migrants in city shelters. There were nearly 19,000 people considered homeless last year. That compares to about 6,000 the year before and 3,900 people in 2022. Bernie Tafoya, News Radio, 105.9 WBBM.
President Trump and First Lady Melania are in North Carolina where recovery...
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery efforts continue in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene last fall. The president says he's considering getting rid of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, calling it bureaucratic and slow. He'll travel to Los Angeles later to view the damage from wildfires. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us is right now to talk about it is Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer with Crescent Capital in Chicago. Jack, thank you for joining us today. And after a week that was kind of had a roaring start, it seems like the markets are taking their breath as we approach the weekend.
Yeah, that's it, Rob. We had certainly a great start. And, there's still parts of the market that are pretty strong still, like Bitcoin up about almost 3.5, actually a little more than 3.5 percentage points today. And also the nuclear theme, which is, of course, the electricity that drives Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining and AI, of course. It's up also pretty strong today. But you're right. Markets are down. A lot of it really on economic data, either consumer sentiment or housing data. Both came in a little disappointing.
And it seems like on the housing front, and this has been a story that we've been talking about basically coming out of the pandemic, which is the housing market is still locked up. You have people who locked in those extremely low interest rates during COVID-19, and they want to enjoy that extremely low mortgage rate for as long as they can. And then you have a lot of people who maybe want to get into the housing market but are scared away by higher mortgage rates. And what kind of impact does that standoff have on the larger economy when we talk about home builders, the people who renovate basements and kitchens? And, you know, when does it really impact the people who build homes and repair them?
Yeah, no, you're right. Housing and all of the ancillary businesses surrounding housing, particularly new, when people move into a home, can represent up to 10% of the economy. So there is certainly long coattails, if you will, around this. And you hit the nail on the head, Rob. You know, we've got high home prices. So if those on the outside looking in are facing high home prices, very high mortgage rates, and really not much supply of new building, which is pretty interesting. You'd think the home builders would be busy trying to get new homes in place, but that's not happening.
I want to zoom in on one local company just because they have been a remarkable success story and kind of flying under the radar, pun intended, and that is United Airlines, reporting a very good fourth quarter earnings this past week. And according to the Wall Street Journal, it has gained more. Its stock has gained more in value than NVIDIA, Tesla, and Netflix. So what is driving the success at United?
Yeah, it's funny. It's a tale of two different markets in the airline industry. If you compare United, which had great results, reported great results, up about 4.5% today, versus American, which surprised everyone to the downside. And I think it's really just what it appears to be is business strategy. American, I think banking a lot of their future on less on business and more on leisure travel, of course, not as high profit margin, lost a lot of their business travelers and the loyalty that went along with it. And United and Delta are picking up a lot of that business.
Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, we will introduce you to the latest generation of ownership of an iconic Chicago steakhouse.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and during Chicago Restaurant Week, it's appropriate to check in on a city dining icon. We welcome in Michelle Derpetti, Principal at Jean and Giorgetti, 500 North Franklin in Chicago, nestled under the L. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And at one time, there were a number of steakhouses in Chicago with names like George Diamond or maybe Barney's Market Club. But in that class, Jean and Giorgetti is still there, and it stands alone. It's been open since 1941. And how do you keep Jean and Giorgetti alive and thriving and relevant in a crowded luxury steakhouse marketplace? What makes it unique outside of its incredible history?
I mean, no pressure with that opening question. thank you for having me on today. And I actually love this question. So how do we keep it alive? You know, we stay true to who we are and what we do. We very much work. We dedicate ourselves to knowing who we are and who we are not. And we believe that we are part of the luxury, you know, restaurant experience. And we have a place in the marketplace. And we do that by staying authentic, by having great product, and, you know, by having great people. We have a wonderful team.
Now, when I have friends who come in from out of town, we try to find a really good downtown restaurant. More often than not, I do recommend Jean and Giorgetti just because it has that character. It has that history. It's right there under the L. The merchandise mart is off in the distance. It is very much a Chicago experience. You walk inside the door, the first thing you see outside of a uniformed bartender is Francis Albert Sinatra, the picture of the chairman who dined there at one time. But the thing that really kind of I wonder about, and that is when you opened in 1941, what was a steak dinner like in the 40s compared to today? Just because agricultural practices have changed, the cows have gotten bigger, the cuts of meat have gotten thicker. How has a steak dinner evolved over time?
Well, technically, I was not there in 1941, so I'm going to base this on insights I've learned from generations before me. But I can say this. So you're absolutely right that a lot of things have evolved and changed over time and gotten bigger, right? The industry requires more products, so now there's mass production and all of these things. We try, going back to the other question you have already asked, we try to stay true to who we've always been. So we partner with vendors that are very intentional about the process and the product. Our beef, for example, does not have antibiotics. We believe in staying true kind of to who we've always been as things evolve. And that's how we know who we are and who we are not. There's times when, you know, it doesn't work for us to go the mass produced route. And so we don't do that. We make all our pasta in house. We make all our bread in house. These are things we still do to stay on brand and to stay true to ourselves.
The Loop and River North are two of the fastest growing neighborhoods in Chicago, and that has been the case coming out of COVID-19. So I understand, Jean and Giorgetti, for me being a suburbanite now, it's a special occasion place. But for a lot of people who live in the neighborhood, it's your neighborhood hangout.
Yes, exactly. It is not really. I love that you think it's a special occasion place, and please join us for all of your special occasions. But a Wednesday at 5 can be a special occasion too. And that's what I tell people all the time, is we are kind of your neighborhood place, your go-to, because you can always depend on the consistency. You can depend on us recognizing your face. You are home when you're in this restaurant. So celebrating a milestone is as wonderful as coming in on, like, for example, today, Chili Day, kicking off restaurant week. It's a great time to come in. So we try to just always be that thing that people can depend on, nostalgia. We don't like to say old, because obviously that, you know, can insinuate not positive stuff. So we like to say, like, nostalgic, classic, and you know what you're going to get, and you know your return on the investment, and that's very important to us.
And then with family, what is the value of family ownership? Because when I mentioned some of the names that are now long gone, you know, George Diamond. When George Diamond left the scene in 1982, that was when the restaurant kind of began its long decline. And there are other places where the family decides it's not worth pursuing this business anymore, even though it's been open for a number of generations. Family ownership. You are the latest to. Mm-hmm. To really have this property under your care. What is the value of family ownership in sustaining a place like Gene and Giorgetti?
You know, family ownership can be a bit of a mixed bag, right? So I'm third generation. My parents bought it from my mother's mother when Gene passed away. So Gene was actually Tony's father-in-law, and not everyone knows that. It was not necessarily a straight line. And family can be a mixed bag. You know, we've had other members of our family involved in this particular business and restaurant who are no longer involved for very intentional purposes. And working with family is great because they're people you can depend on, but it's also difficult. And I think the importance of maintaining family, like for us, what has set us apart is that in our three generations that have been in charge of the restaurant, we put the people in the restaurant and the customers that come into the restaurant as the heart and soul of the business. And for us, when we honor those two things and protect those two things, we're also perpetuating and honoring the legacy. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. Michelle Derpetti, Principal, Gene and Giorgetti Restaurant, 500 North Franklin in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As more companies order workers back to the office, some employees are choosing to simply call it quits. We're joined by Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago. Jason, thank you for joining us today. And the return-to-office trend has been taking place slowly but surely. Big companies like Amazon, AT&T, Boeing, Dell, JPMorgan Chase, UPS, and the Washington Post have some return-to-office mandates for at least some employees. So back to the 9-to-5 grind, 5 days a week in the office. But a number of people say they would much rather quit than go back to work 5 days a week, and they value that flexibility even more than a raise.
Yes, that is accurate. A lot of people during COVID took advantage of this hybrid work schedule, this work remote schedule, and some people have moved further out of the Chicagoland area where before they didn't want to commute, now they have a longer commute, but being 2 or 3 days a week, it's fine. But when now it's 5 days a week, people are saying, I don't care how much money it's worth, I'd prefer to be working from home and not being in the car for hours on end.
Now, we talk about the Great Resignation a couple of years ago, where employees had a great deal of leverage and they could demand compensation that was pretty eye-popping, but they could also demand work-from-home arrangements as well. Like the race for talent was that competitive. If a bunch of people quit their jobs over a return-to-office mandate, what would that do to the employment market writ large?
So I think what you're seeing is a lot of firms are trying to go, whether it's 3 days to 4 days, 4 days to 5 days in the office. But depending on the level of position, specifically on the junior to mid-level position, individuals do not want to be in the office for 5 days a week. And firms who are making this mandate, not the huge firms like an Amazon, but your normal size 50 to 100-person company, are realizing they're having a very difficult time attracting that junior to mid-level person. And you are starting to see people saying, we want 5 days a week, but we're not getting the talent we want, and we're going to have to figure out a solution. Otherwise, we're never going to hire successfully for the roles we're looking for.
Or could you find yourself in a situation where, yes, it has to be 5 days a week, but you could work from home on almost like a no excuse basis? Like if you have to, you know, let the cable guy in or the plumber in, you can just fire up the work from home apparatus, and that'll be fine.
So that is a really good point. A lot of times hiring managers saying we are 5 days a week, but wink, wink. I have no issue with you working 4 days a week, but officially our policy is five. So a lot of companies are having official policies, and then the hiring managers are sort of saying, wink, wink, we really are 4 days a week, but I have to officially tell you it's 5 days a week. It's going to say it in the contract, but we are okay with that.
Jason Wachtel, Managing Partner, J.W. Michaels & Company in Chicago.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station. News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Thanks for joining us for the Noon Business Hour. Be sure to listen to News Radio 105.9 throughout the day at 23 and 53 past the hour as we continue following the news that affects your money.